help me find my way. I now work with the Siletz youth in my community. Hear my story on Prison Pipeline, November 3rd at 6:30 p.m. Nanta Shri Nagi Thai. Nanta ho ho ho. Nanta ho.
You are listening to KBOO. Coming up next on Health and Healthcare Forum, host Roberta Hall and clinical dietitian Nancy Sullivan discuss a recent study on the negative health effects produced by artificial sweeteners. Stay tuned.
Welcome to the Health and Healthcare Forum. I'm Roberta Hall. In this series, we feature conversations with people who have special insights about health topics as diverse as environmental hazards, new and old medical treatments, and the benefits of universal healthcare. Sometimes we present an informal talk or even a lecture. Doing this program has enriched my life, and I hope it enriches yours. My guest today is Nancy Sullivan. She's been on our program before. She is a clinical dietitian, and she lives in California and works there, but she's visiting in Oregon today. So welcome, Nancy.
Thank you, Roberta.
Well, I'm really glad to have you here. We're going to start out talking about a topic we've talked about before, but there's a little bit of a news plug on this particular one that's very interesting. We've talked before about how the microbiota of the gut are so important to keep well and healthy and doing their jobs, or the whole body doesn't function well. So I was very interested to see articles in the journal Nature. And the main one was published online in September, and it's titled Artificial Sweeteners Induce Glucose Intolerance by Altering the Gut Microbiota. And there's another article also in Nature. And this one is titled, Sugar Substitutes Linked to Obesity. Artificial sweetener seems to change gut microbiome. Nancy, were you excited to hear about this article?
You know, I really was. Both of them, actually. Because it's really based on what good clinical dietitians have been saying since the very beginning when saccharin and aspartame came into the products in the marketplace. Our body is designed for real food. So when you introduce something that is not, quote, real or nature made, that's artificial or made in a laboratory, and not everyone will agree with this, but when you do this, you are going to change structure, especially in the gut. You know, years ago, I gave a talk to a group of fourth graders, and I said, we have an open tube that lies inside our body. There's an opening at the top and an opening at the bottom, and they all giggled. And I said, this open tube, actually, the inside is actually outside the body. And this little boy in the room said, you mean like putting a pipe in the ground? And I said, yes, it is like that. So what we put down that tube, what we put in our mouth that goes into that tube, and how we make enzymes and gastric acids and all of the different variety of things that help our body digest that food is absorbed to the inside of our body. So the inside of our body, the health of that inside of our body, is dependent upon the health of the inside of that tube. And if we put good food down there that our body was designed to digest, and it's absorbed to the inside of the body, then the health of the inside of the body keeps the health of the inside of the tube healthy. So it's all circular. So when we introduce something that's artificial and or made in a laboratory that's not structured like natural foods are, it's going to change the inside of that gut and the inside of that tube, which will eventually then change how we absorb various nutrients and then how our body then may end up with different types of diseases. Not everybody agrees with this, But what I'm explaining is just strictly straight old anatomy, physiology of how our body will use food.
This article seems to give that a lot of support. Of course, they used mice, but the lessons that were learned in this have finally caught everybody's attention and allowed people like you, who actually work with humans in a clinical situation and have observed effects on clients, patients who use a lot of Diet Pepsi, might have been Diet Coke. Let me just read from the abstract and then we'll go to some of these clinical experiences you've had here, because why they did this study, no doubt, was because people like you have said you ought to pay attention to this. We need some hard data with animal data, perhaps, to really clinch this, because these products that we're talking about, these artificial sweeteners, are approved at this point. Let me just read this little bit here. Non-caloric artificial sweeteners are among the most widely used food additives worldwide, regularly consumed by lean and obese individuals alike. Their consumption is considered safe and beneficial owing to their low caloric content. Yet supporting scientific data remains sparse and controversial. Here we demonstrate that consumption of commonly used formulations drives the development of glucose intolerance through induction of compositional and functional alterations to the intestinal microbiota. That sounds very strong.
It does. You know how this all really got started? People became very weight conscious and were told that they needed to lower the fat in their diet to keep their cholesterol levels down.
Right.
So all of this started back in the early 80s. And then we came out with the National Cholesterol Program, and everybody walking around, I bet 90% of everybody that's listening to this program can tell you what their cholesterol number is. And it doesn't really matter, because 3/4 of your cholesterol level is made from your body. And then a lot of people don't know about the good or the bad. And the reason I'm interjecting this is that that's how we then segue into low-fat, low-cal products to lose weight and to keep our cholesterol levels down. And in order to do that, manufacturers then used artificial sweeteners to lower the caloric level and also lower the fat level in products. However, they introduced something else that caused more problems in this tube, in this gut, and altered that gut. And I actually been saying this for many, many, many years. Ironically, Roberta, I actually got some phone calls from the article, because it came out in mainstream newspapers. I got a phone call from a couple of my clients that I saw in a doctor's office who said, "Nancy, you told me this years ago and I believed you. Did you see the article in the paper?" So then what occurred is people then became a little bit up in arms about aspartame causing cancer or causing problems. So the Food and Drug Administration, through Monsanto, who produces this particular product, put out some behind the scenes, I don't think it was legislation, I'm not sure, so don't quote me on that, so that aspartame is in products, but it now can be labeled as a natural flavoring.
Oh my goodness.
So what I tell people is this: if you pick up a container of yogurt and it says low fat, look at the ingredients and look at the caloric level. It might be low fat and it might have hardly any calories in it, but if you read the ingredients somewhere at towards the tail end of those ingredients, you're going to see the word natural flavorings. You used to see the word aspartame and you used to see it on the front of the label, and it's not there anymore because it's now a natural flavoring.
Oh, that's deceptive.
People think that they're eating these yogurts and they're getting good bacteria and it's low fat and it's only 60 calories, but in essence, they're eating a yogurt with an artificial sweetener in it.
Just to let everybody know, yogurt is especially diabolical example here, because normally after maybe you have an infection and you're given an antibiotic and then you're instructed, eat a lot of yogurt because you need to restore that natural biota. And so yogurt is looked upon as a source that can be restorative in a case where sometimes you really do need an antibiotic that is called an antibiotic. And you know what it is. It's not called a natural flavoring.
Exactly. And so what I suggest people do is, first and foremost, stop eating the low-fat and the non-fat and the fruited yogurts. Look at the labels. If you see natural flavorings on it, you'll also see high sugar content because of the fruit that is put into those yogurts. But you know, it's a good buy if you buy some good Greek yogurt. You can buy some plain yogurt that's low fat, that has nothing in it, and it will say that. And there are several brands in the market, and I won't name different brands. Well, actually, I will. One of them is Nancy's Yogurt.
An Oregon product.
I'll say, take that yogurt home and put it in another container or pull out some of it and add your own fruit to it. Add your own fruit to it, maybe a little cinnamon, touch a nutmeg, stir it down in, put it in the refrigerator. Now you have your own fruited yogurt. Tastes better, better for you. And have a fourth to a half of a cup at least daily to help keep that good flora balanced in your body. In general, whether you're on an antibiotic or not, it's good for you.
Of course, there are other sources, and one of them is soda. Coke, Pepsi, and probably lots of other things that I'm not even aware of. These are sold sometimes in public schools, certainly at universities, almost, you know, everywhere you go when you have a vending machine. You may have available for you some orange juice or something like that, but it's often one, usually only one, of the companies runs the vending machine, and it's got a lot of it in it. Low calorie or diet, they call it diet. And when you say diet, you know, you can think good diet or bad diet. And probably you should think bad diet.
We're talking about sodas and beverages. That's one of the areas that I've talked about for many, many years. People walk around now with beverages. They didn't do that 40 years ago. We carry water with us. We carry Coke cans. We carry bottles of all types of stuff. What happens when people drink a lot of the diet drinks, and I've said this for a long time, it actually will promote weight gain. And that's what one of the articles that you cited here is talking about. The physiology behind that is this. I'll simplify it, but you can pull up any physiology anatomy book and look at the root of digestion and sugar, and you can read it. When you drink a diet drink that has aspartame or one of the sugar-free products in it, when it hits your mouth, your body perceives that you have given yourself some type of sugar product, and insulin is needed in order to utilize that sugar. So your pancreas releases insulin, which goes into the bloodstream, thinking that it's going to combine with that sugar and feed your body cells. But that's not the case, because there is no sugar. So you're drinking this diet drink, and then at some point in time, you've got insulin in that bloodstream and nothing to utilize it. So you become hungry, or you become more thirsty. You toss in another diet drink. Now you've got more insulin in there, and you're also taxing, which is why a lot of people will end up with glucose intolerance from too much of that diet sugar that's producing more insulin, which then promotes overeating. Because the brain says, I have insulin in here, nothing to utilize it. So people who drink diet drinks will actually end up overeating.
Just occurred to me to ask also about caffeine. A lot of these drinks do have some caffeine in it. And I'm wondering if that kind of interacts too.
I think in terms of the caffeine, there's a couple of sides to that. One, it becomes very, very personal things. So as we age, we digest things differently and not as effective as when we were younger. So that's a big factor. But you're right. Each person then finds what works best for them. Personally speaking, my son fixed a great meal last night, and it had a lot of tomatoes in it. And so my face is all flushed and broken out this morning from tomatoes that didn't used to happen several years ago. I don't care, because I love the fresh tomatoes that he serves. So, you know, we go with where we are without doing a lot of harm. Caffeine, we'll talk about that at some point in time, because it actually can be good. Small amount, 6 cups of coffee a day, no. But for a lot of people, a cup or two of a beverage with caffeine in it actually is a good vasodilator and actually helps some people who have circulation problems. So another topic, another time. But back to this sugar substitute situation. It's really simple. You can choose not to drink the diet drinks. If you're hooked onto the caffeine in a diet drink, because a lot of people are, you could choose to use a product that does not have an artificial sweetener in it and taper down off of caffeine if you're drinking a lot for you, and you have to determine what that means. If you stop drinking a product to cut out the artificial sweetener and you end up with headaches or other types of body aches because you don't have that caffeine intake, then you might be able to use iced tea, etc., to merge yourself out of this situation. Then you enter in, as I said in the beginning, real food, and that means sugar or honey. Your body likes that. It knows how to metabolize it right. Food tastes better with it. And if you have small, frequent meals while you're going through this, so that you always have a little something to eat in the morning, especially a little protein, because it stays with you a little longer. And maybe even mid-morning, you cut up an apple and you have part of an apple. And then lunch, you never skip, and you never skip mid-afternoon. Everybody needs a little bit of an afternoon snack. And it could be the other part of that apple. It could be a peanut butter sandwich, a quarter of it, however it might work. And then a balanced dinner. So if you eat balanced and have 4 to 6 small meals or snacks per day, you're going to keep your blood sugar a little more even. And if you utilize real food, it can help you move through this withdrawal from the high caffeine, high artificial sweeteners, etc. And then, as I said, introduce real yogurt with your own real fruit in it. You could mix in frozen fruit. You could mix in fresh fruit, canned fruit. You could even use canned fruit. And I had a son who loved canned peach halves in heavy syrup. He didn't like the syrup. He liked the texture of the peaches because sugar is a really good preservative. So I would buy big cans of peach halves, dump them into a colander, rinse them off, put them in a container, and put them in the refrigerator. So you can do this at home. You could buy whatever is inexpensive on the shelf. It doesn't have to be the low sugar, the non-sugar, the whatever sugar, because they're going to be water-packed. And be careful, some of them will have artificial sweeteners in them. But buy what's the good buy of what you would like, rinse it off, chop it up, can mix some of it into your yogurt with other flavorings, as I suggested. And you're going to find that you're going to enjoy it probably better than what you're getting by popping off a little tin lid.
Well, let's talk about how come these are approved by the Food and Drug Administration. And I know that in the case of aspartame, it was a high official in the government who used his inside contacts, I guess we could call them, to get it finally approved. Once it's approved, then it's very hard to get it out, I'm assuming. All of these have gone through some kind of approval process. How did that come about, and what can we do to turn that around? Because if we tell people, well, this article happened to appear in Nature, how many people read Nature? You see a lot of slight references to various health issues, and if you followed all of them, who knows? We tend to need a little bit more. It's not just people listening to KBOO who could benefit. So what's going on? How come these things got approved?
It's political, and it happened way back when. I think it started in the early 80s when we began to see more and more of these products. It's cost effective for businesses. Business will make a lot of money out of a little container that's 4 or 6 ounces of yogurt. It's not as cost effective for a business to make one brand. Look at the different brands in the market now of anything. When you went shopping, depending on how old you are and you're listening to this program, even 20 years ago, we did not have the number of products in a supermarket that we have now. And let's just say that out of all the millions of people in this country, if 1/32nd of us, just a tiny amount of people, stopped buying all of these things that have aspartame in them or the GMO foods, and that movement is growing and becoming stronger. If when we went to the market, we bought our yogurt in a quart container of plain, non-fat, or low-fat, or whole yogurt, and we bought the kind that had the good bacteria in it and nothing else, and took that home, that would change a lot of things.
So you think that a consumer organization, or people organized in some way, that that's probably the way to go. Now, I'm remembering many years ago when there were boycotts of Nestle because of their practice of giving canned milk to new mothers and getting them hooked on that, the consumer movement of that type.
Well, actually, you can be a one-person consumer movement when you go to the grocery store. You can choose, and we'll just take this one product. You can choose to just buy plain yogurt and put your own fruit in it, mm-hmm. your own flavorings, put it in your own little individual things, pack it in your lunch, whatever you do. It won't take much time to do it. And if half the people who are listening to this program do that, that's a consumer movement right there.
Small and then grow.
Yes, and very effective, because if 50 people listening to this program now stop buying those little individual yogurts in their particular grocery store and they want more of the other, what do you think that the grocer is going to start to stock more of?
One would hope. And of course, where we are here in Corvallis, we have a wonderful food co-op, and Nancy's is the prime yogurt. Always has been. It's something that, again, points to labeling as important, because you have to read those labels or you might not know. And then, as you were just mentioning a little while ago, there's the way that the corporations have induced changes in language. You know, there are rules about what can be labeled as organic, but a lot of products are labeled natural food or something. And there's no criteria for that one, and that's a sneaky way to try to make people think they're getting a good product.
Exactly. So the real bottom line is that you choose to purchase and eat real food. And when you look at the food, did this come out of the ground? Is this prepackaged? This is in the produce section. This is the meat section. This is the dairy section. What's in the dairy section? No, I can't believe it's not butter. I can believe it's not butter. Buy the real food. Buy the real eggs. And then you will see, one, you won't spend as much money when you start buying real food and making real food in your home. And that's one of the things that when I've worked with clients one-on-one to point out, how much did you pay for this yogurt? Well, they're four for something. And I said, but you can buy this for a dollar something, and you have a half gallon of this, two of these for something, and you put your own fruit into it. And so I'll show them how much money they can save from doing that. So they find that they end up sometimes with $5 to $20 less on their grocery bill each week by choosing to buy real food and buy seasonal foods and using farmers markets, et cetera, and co-ops, as you're talking about. It's not that difficult to do it.
Could you just give us an example of one of the clients you've worked with that you've observed these aspects?
Yes. I had a young woman actually who was in her mid-30s come see me. She and her husband didn't cook, and they had a small child that was turning 3, and they ate out every night. She didn't know how to cook at all, and that's one of the reasons why she came to see me. So I set her up with 3 or 4 meals that would be very simple for her to do. One of them was to purchase some chicken thighs, put them in a dish, drizzle some olive oil and salt and pepper, and put them in the oven at 350 for 45 minutes, along with a real potato that had been quartered, and ask her to buy some medley of vegetables that were frozen, the free-flowing frozen ones in a bag, pour them out, put them in the microwave, and she had a meal, and she cooked. And one of the other meals I had her do was at breakfast, instead of using Pop-Tarts, I said, well, you have a toaster, so let's get a loaf of whole grain bread. I wrote all this out for her, of course. And you're going to put some peanut butter on it, and you're going to put some real jam on it. You're going to make that for your daughter. And I also taught her how to make hard-boiled eggs.
Oh, my goodness.
A lot of the things that I used for her for these meals were things that were so simple, so that when she left there for the week and came back, she was successful and excited. And of course, they're the money that they were spending going out.
Had she had problems with digestion or...
With her, it was the fact that they were not eating healthy. She was overweight, which is another reason why she was seeing me initially. She said, I don't know how to cook, and now my daughter is getting older, and you know, I need help. Her husband was overweight, too.
Okay, an overweight issue, and that relates to some of these sugar substitutes, and of course, we could talk about restaurant oversizing the food. It seemed to me that one of the reasons driving that whole thing, a lot of people feel that when they get a meal, they may not be quite so fussy about the taste and the quality of the food, but if there isn't enough, and maybe extra, they remember it and don't go back. And somehow that lesson needs to be turned around.
I think a lot of people want to take food home with them when they go to a restaurant and feel like they have two meals. A long time ago, you'd go to a restaurant and have a meal and walk out and not even think about having takeout to take home. I mean, it truly was a doggy bag.
So we have a lot of things to work on. Well, let me just mention these articles again. And I'm talking to Nancy Sullivan, who is a clinical dietitian and works with clients to help them understand their body system and find the foods that will improve it. These articles were in Nature. The online article, the lead author is Jotham Suez, J-O-T-H-A-M-S-U-E-Z, it's just a way to search for it on the internet. Artificial sweeteners induce glucose intolerance by altering the gut microbiota.
One article from Nature is from the September 2014 issue. You can go online to nature.com/nature/podcast. Let me repeat that. nature.com/nature/podcast, and it will give you the article on sugar substitutes linked to obesity.
Okay, so let's all hope for reducing the obesity epidemic, starting with changing some of the foods we eat and reading those labels.
Thinking real food for your real body.
Grow it yourself if you can, but if not, buy it from someone who does.
Thank you, Bobby, for having me here today.
Thank you, Nancy Sullivan. Let me add a word about corporations and artificial sweeteners. While editing this conversation, I noticed that Nancy Sullivan attached the artificial sweetener aspartame to Monsanto, and this triggered a memory of another company being its developer. So I did some quick internet research and learned we are both right. Though Surley developed the product in 1965, Monsanto acquired the company in 1985, and there's a story here involving another familiar name, Donald Rumsfeld. He served as CEO and then as president of Surley between 1977 and 1985. In his tenure, he downsized the company and made lots of money for it, earning the award as the outstanding chief executive in the pharmaceutical industry. Serving President Reagan in the 1980s, he helped get aspartame accepted by the FDA for use in some products. He went on to play a major role in Monsanto's acquisition of Surley in 1985, and then in 1996, during the term of another president that Rumsfeld served, the FDA removed all restrictions on the use of aspartame. Pretty interesting background to understand our country's health and dietary problems. The Health and Healthcare Forum is produced by Roberta Hall and recorded with the aid of Joe Magner of Anabyte Electronics and Recording. Theme music was composed by Lori Childers and played by Lori Childers and Kent White.
The following KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Skyway Bar and Grill, specializing in barbecue, scratch-made foods, drinks, and live music. In Zigzag on the Way to Mount Hood, this Wednesday, the 29th, Skyway presents Jacob Fred and McTuff at 8 p.m. all ages until 10 p.m. SkywayBarAndGrill.com for hours, menu, and events calendar.
Howdy, everybody. I'm Rose Maddox, and I'd like to tell you that you're listening to KBOO in Portland, Oregon, the station that I listen to when I'm in the area.
Stand by for the noontime jamboree.
You got news headlines?
Yeah, they're not in the
pool. Okay.
But can I just pull them up on that?
Sure, go right ahead. We got news headlines here. Can't wait for that. You got them over there? They had slipped by my mind here. Luckily, we have volunteers standing by to keep our news headlines up for us, and everybody likes to hear them at noon, I know. You can pull them up in there. So used to having someone who's more erudite using the equipment than I am come in and give me a hand here with this stuff here. Perhaps you could stand by at all times just in case I need a little backup. Aha! We got buttons here.
Are you ready?
Which one's it on? Where the show was before. Push start.
Sure.
Huh? Ooh.
It's time for the KBOO News at Noon for Monday, October 27th, 2014. Yesterday, United States Marines and British soldiers officially ended combat operations in Afghanistan by handing over a base to Afghan security forces. The base is in Helmand in southwestern Afghanistan. It was one of the most dangerous areas for U.S. forces. Almost 1,000 soldiers died there. Helmand is also a global supplier of poppy, a key ingredient in heroin, which exacerbated the conflict. The war in Afghanistan has lasted for 13 years. American soldiers will fly home at undisclosed dates. Multnomah County Library is launching a study to better understand the technology usage of lower-income individuals. Launched in conjunction with Portland State University, the study's architects say that they hope it will allow the library to better